Welcome to the holiday edition of Dog-Eared Reads, Kodiak Public Library Association's monthly program to tell you about what's happening at the library, its programming, as well as to share some good books that we might have read. Good evening and happy holidays. I'm Lori Madsen, president of the Kodiak Public Library Association, and it's my pleasure to bring you tonight's Dog-Eared Reads. This month on Dog-Eared Reads, we're going to be talking about book clubs. What are book clubs all about? How do you get involved with one? And some comments from people who have been in book clubs. Also, we'll have a book review of Jodi Picoult's recent book called Small Great Things. I'm also going to replay a book review that Bob Ross did on From Humboldt to Kodiak, 1886 to 1895, just in case you missed that one. KPLA volunteer Jen Sheridan will be sharing a poem called Winkin', Blinkin', and Nod. I'll be telling you about upcoming activities at the library and that Kodiak Public Library Association has on tap for us this year. Throughout tonight's broadcast, you'll hear music from Windham Hill. The library has over 12 CDs of Windham Hill music. If you like what you hear, be sure to go down to the public library and check one of them out. Kodiak Library is sponsoring an art contest, Dream It, Be It, and they're offering two art sessions on Thursday, December 28th and 29th at 2 o'clock p.m. at the library. The library has partnered with the Kodiak Soroptimus International to support the Live Your Dream art contest. It's for boys and girls ages 4 to 18, and they're asking participants to think about a woman who has helped mentor them or a role model in their life. They are invited to create an original piece of artwork that depicts that woman, and then in 50 words or less, share why they look up to and admire that woman. The artwork can be created in any medium that remains flat or on a page, and all artwork must be original. The work cannot be any larger than 11 inches by 14 inches, and if you can pick up a copy of the contest rules at the front desk of the library, you'll find out what it's all about. The Dream It, Be It art session will be held in the craft room on the 28th of December from 2 to 5 p.m. and the 29th at those same times. For more information, you can give the library a call at 486-8636. Now that the holidays are just about over, it's time to get your altered book submission ready. What are altered books, you might ask? Well, it's taking an old book and making it into a piece of art. Kodiak Public Library Association, in association with the Kodiak Arts Council, and this year a high school art and culture class, will be sponsoring the Altered Books event. The opening night is February 2nd, so people have the entire month of January to get their books ready for the show. On Saturday, January 20th, the Arts Council and the Kodiak Public Library Association are sponsoring a workshop led by Kate Shoemaker at the Fisherman's Hall at 1 o'clock p.m. The fee is $30 for supplies and her time, and it's limited to 12 participants. Students over the age of 12 are invited to attend, and it will be a chance for you to get to work on your project and have your questions answered by somebody who is a great teacher, and will give you some advice on your projects. Sign-ups will begin after the first of the year at the Kodiak Arts Council office. For more information, you can contact kpla.alaska@gmail.com. KPLA is currently looking for several board members to fill some seats. My term, after 6 years on the KPLA board, is sadly coming to an end. There are also two other members who feel they cannot continue after March. So if you're interested in joining the KPLA board, please shoot us an email at kpla.alaska@gmail.com or feel free to call one of us to ask information or more details about what it means to serve on the Kodiak Public Library Association board. You can access our website at Kodiak Public Library Association.org, and we are on Facebook too. So check it out, and please let us know if you're interested in joining this active and engaged board for the good of the Kodiak Public Library. This month, I wanted to explore the idea of book clubs. Why are they so popular, and how do people get involved with them? I myself belong to two different book clubs who read a variety of literature and nonfiction books as well, some I probably would not read if it weren't for the requirement that it's this month's book to read. Recently, I read The Big Burn, the story of Teddy Roosevelt and the founding of the U.S. Forestry Service. That was a very interesting and intriguing book. Recently, my book club in Bell's Flats read the book Small Great Things by Jodi Picoult. This book has been called one of her most important books that she's written. I never think of her as writing important books, but after reading the book and her treatment of a very sensitive topic of racism, I concur it is an important book. Later on, you'll be hearing my book review and some interesting information about that title. What's exciting about being a member of a book club is you get a chance to get together with your friends and people maybe you don't even know and talk about something you've read, and different perspectives that are brought into the conversation always give me food for thought. I spoke with Katie Baxter, Kodiak Public Library Director, to find out about book clubs and how they work here at the Kodiak Public Library. Welcome, Katie, and thank you for coming in to talk to me today.
Thank you, Lori. It's really nice to be here on this drizzly day.
You're welcome. Well, I noticed that there's a display of multiple copies of book for book clubs. Do local book clubs contact you about their reading lists and request the titles?
We do have a couple of book clubs on the island who do that on a regular basis. They'll meet with their groups and go through their own selection process. And then they will follow up with an email, simple as that, with the selections and the months when they'll be reading those books. So we have a chance to get them in ahead of time.
That's handy.
And those shelves are really the place where we keep the books for handy access. Anyone can borrow them. Mm-hmm. And maybe, Laura, you've seen some titles are there for a long time.
Yes.
So they could be there up to 2 years.
Oh.
Because they might be hot picks, mm-hmm. and different book clubs are curious to see what other book clubs are reading.
Yes.
So some of those books are there for 2 years, some may be there for 6 months.
Wow. About how many book clubs or reading groups do you think we have here in Kodiak, or who have contacted you?
Well, we are contacted maybe by 3 to 4 book clubs a year. However, I think there are several, meaning more than 7, maybe as many as a dozen, across the island, friends meeting in their friends' homes, that type of thing. So we don't know everyone.
Oh, well, I hope that if people listen to our broadcast today that they will get an interest and come in and talk with you and see what you have. I noticed that you have book bags that are filled with books. How do those work?
So we realized that some titles are very, very popular. Mm-hmm. And of course, the state of Alaska has an Alaskana Award and also promotes certain authors during the year.
Yes.
So we ended up with, say, 10 to 12 copies of some of these books.
Oh.
Because sometimes the state library provides multiple copies, sometimes the Alaska Center for the Book. And so we decided to create what's called a reader's pack. And so it is one item, a handy, really attractive, don't you think, plastic bag?
Yes, you brought one with you today. I wish the folks could
see
it.
And so one one patron can check out that bag, which has 10 copies of the book.
Cool.
So that you can just have an impromptu gathering at your home. You'll notice what I brought today, I think, has some selections of Shakespeare's comedies.
Uh-huh.
Because our Shakespeare reading circle was really popular last year for mm-hmm. a couple of different seasons of the year. And so people can come and grab this reader's pack of plays, go home and do some fun reader's theater.
Oh, fun. Well, that's cool. Book clubs that are a part of the library? I remember we used to have a graphic novel book club. Mm-hmm. Do we still have book clubs like that?
The library staff loves to offer group reading activities since we have the space and mm-hmm. we have staff with different reading interests and backgrounds. And so the graphic novel club came about as one of the summer reading activities.
Uh-huh.
And some of our 20 to 30, 40 somethings mm-hmm. really wanted a chance to look at these graphic novels, talk about their interests in this emerging genre that mm-hmm. is now a very credible genre. Libraries have been supporting graphic novel collections since the late 90s.
Uh-huh.
And so we took that book club on the road. You might remember people could meet down at the brewery,
right,
ages 18 and older. So that was great fun.
Mm-hmm.
We also have, as staff time allows, another group called the Roving Readers.
Okay.
And that's a fun book club where we would read a title related to Kodiak or Alaska and then follow up with a field trip related to the book.
So it's not mm-hmm. on a regular basis, it's as needed, more or less?
It's more as time allows and as staffing allows. And one thing we learned is our book clubs need to be seasonal
uh-huh.
to accommodate our patrons' lifestyles.
Sure.
So instead of putting pressure on people to meet once a month, we might do it 3 months out of the year or do a big program 1 month.
Oh, that's a great idea. How about electronic books that are available through Overdrive Media and the state? Do you purchase titles based on requests, or are we just lucky that some of them are available?
It's a great combination of both strategies.
Mm-hmm.
Overdrive is the vendor
mm-hmm.
that from which the State Library of Alaska and also the Kodiak Library purchases electronic and audio books.
Yes.
And the State Library has a committee of library members, library staff,
mm-hmm.
and suggestions are made. These books are purchased. At this point, we are up to like tens of thousands of titles.
Yes.
In that Alaska Digital Library. And then because we are a remote location and we have avid readers who are also travelers,
uh-huh.
the Kodiak Public Library decided to also invest in the Kodiak Public Library version of the Overdrive collection so that you all don't have to wait as long
yes.
in the queue for some of those titles. But it's getting hard for us to keep up with the queue because more and more people are enjoying the Overdrive books.
Yes, well, they're excellent. I have them on my phone, mm-hmm. on my iPad. And like you say, when you're traveling, it's very nice to have your book at your fingertips.
And may I also say, we're working closely with the village schools
uh-huh.
so that the students there and the reading coaches who are participating in Battle of the Books,
uh-huh.
they have access to the Overdrive collection. Because as you know, it's the state of Alaska. The kids started up that Battle of the Books program years and years and years ago.
Yes, here in Kodiak.
Yes. And so now it's this national program.
Mm-hmm.
And Overdrive is great about keeping track of those lists and just adding those books to the collection as they're available.
Oh, fantastic. That's good to know. Well, I know you're in a book club or two, and I was wondering if you had any suggestions for what makes a successful book club.
I think it is truly the reader's openness to read a book that they may never have selected on their own. And be open to listen to other people's reactions, questions, and have fun with the responses.
Mm-hmm.
Truly, I think that is the magic that happens with most every book club I've either been a member of, as you mentioned,
uh-huh.
or that I've seen in action.
Mm-hmm.
It's recognizing that it's more creating that place and time to delve into the written word,
yes.
and sometimes the spoken word,
mm-hmm.
to just enjoy the power of that art and expression within your community.
And as you say, you'll read books, perhaps, that you might not choose on your own because it's that month's reading material. Do you have any other comments or ideas about Kodiak book clubs, perhaps suggestions for patrons who might want to start their own club?
I think that's a really good point. I think we have people who come into our community and perhaps they're not immediately affiliated with a school or a church or fish and game, you know, a workplace, and they just may have a hard time knowing what's out there to be involved in something. And so I remember I had this experience with one patron, and I just took that person's contact information and I passed, I didn't pass on that personal information, but I shared word that there's someone who really wants to read with a group of people. And I think, Lori, that's one reason why the library wants to keep offering these social occasions for book discussions so that people can meet each other. I have a feeling a couple of people have participated in a library book club and then go off and start their own because they end up living in the same neighborhood or loving the same coffee shop, you know, and they'll meet there. The Senior Center has a great book club going on, and so some of those members check out other book clubs and then bring those suggestions to the other book club. So there's this whole underground world of reading.
Yes. Well, and it's just wonderful that the public library has done so much to facilitate the groups and make things available for them and these book clubs that you're offering and reading groups. It's just great. And I want to thank you very much for that opportunity for us. And I think the spoken word is getting its due here.
Yes, it's really great fun, and certainly it's our honor to be working with all these members of the public. So we're glad that people are using these books.
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming in today, Katie.
Thank you, Lori.
It seems as though there's certain age groups that have time for book clubs, those who are retired and those who perhaps stay-at-home moms. But there are also young adult book clubs, and people of all ages belong to them. In one of the book clubs I belong to, we have an 80-year-old as well as a 20-year-old, and the conversations are ever so lively. In our book club, often we have food that goes along with the kind of book we're reading. So, for example, in one book club we're reading the book Snow Child, we're going to have food that's white and good to eat in the winter. I'm sure there'll be halibut and cauliflower, maybe even ice cream. But it helps form a bond within the group when you have food and beverages that make the evening bright. Many times book clubs will meet on weekends when people are available or on a certain weeknight. For example, one of my book clubs meets on the second Tuesday of every month at 6 o'clock. By 8 o'clock, we're done and on our way home. Very much within a certain parameter, but it makes for something we can count on. Book clubs have become popular more recently, perhaps because of what they call the Oprah effect. When Oprah Winfrey started naming books that were part of her book club, sales in some books soared that might not have been chosen otherwise. She has pared it down now to Oprah 2.0 book club, and instead of trying to recommend a novel or a book every month, she's now got it down to two per year. Some of those do become bestsellers because Oprah has talked about it in her magazines or on her show, but it has encouraged reading, which is a good thing, and that's the point. We want to encourage literacy and reading. At the public library, I've seen they have book bags that are filled with books. So if somebody wants to check out three or four at a time, they're already packaged for you and ready to go. The library also has hosted book clubs. They had a graphic novel book club that used to meet at the brewery, and that was fun for people who liked the graphic novels. According to a 2011 article in Slate magazine, more than 5 million adults are thought to be in reading groups, not counting the online clubs like BookTok.org, a free book discussion group with thousands of members and hundreds of forums. They read and discuss fiction, nonfiction, short stories, and poetry, and host live chats and interviews with leading authors. Book clubs are not just the province of a single demographic. They don't favor leftist intellectuals or far-right thinkers. There are clubs about young adult novels, government works by Plato, lesbian literature, science fiction, just to name a few. There are clubs devoted to food books and to the Bible. Men and women both take part in book clubs and have since a time when men's and women's social roles were thought to be totally dissimilar. What is it about the idea of joining a reading group that draws such a broad American cross-section? I asked some of my friends who were in book clubs for their ideas about why they joined and what they liked about it, and ideas for how to get one started. I called my friend Karen Yashin to get some ideas from her about why book clubs are so special. Karen, what kind of discussions do you have in your book group?
Well, we have lots of different kinds of discussions, but it depends really a lot on what the book is and what the theme of the book is or genre of the book. And our discussions will go from that. There are people who bring questions about that specific book. You know, there's always questions in the back of books, or you can look them up online. So we rely on a couple of our people to do that. And then there's discussions that pop up once we get into the book, because lots of times a book will harken back to someone's experience, and mm-hmm. so we'll talk about that. So the discussions are fun, and you learn an awful lot about people in book club by, you know, talking about the things that matter to them or their experiences.
Right, right. Well, do you remember some titles that your group has read that you like the best, or that provoked the most interesting discussion?
You know, I wish I could hone in on a title, and there might be other people that would be better with that. I specifically remember a couple of books that did provoke interesting conversation, and Drop City was one of them, because there are a number of us in the book club. This is a small book club, but there are a few of us that are of that age that went through the 60s, and so it was interesting to see if we had even had anything remotely resembling an experience like that. Or if we knew of people who had an experience like the commune in Drop City.
I see.
And then Unbroken by Laura, I think it's Hillenbrand.
Mm-hmm.
I would not have chosen to read a book like that.
Uh-huh.
And but it was fascinating and harrowing, and I'm glad that I read the book.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see one person's experience through a war.
Yes.
So, and because it was a true story, it just made it all the more emotional, I think, for a number of us. And that provoked a lot of interesting discussion, because we had read a number of books about different wartime periods.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember our discussion about The Grapes of Wrath. It seemed like we got a different take on it now as adults than we ever did when we had to read it in high school.
And that's the one I missed. I was out of town when we did Grapes of Wrath, and I didn't read it. I have it. I borrowed it from you, Lori.
Oh, okay.
I have it now, and I'm going to read it. And so we'll have to rediscuss that one. But I think you're right. Our perspective now would be so much different.
It would be. Well, what interested you in joining a book club in the first place?
Well, Kodiak winters are long.
Yes.
And I don't remember if this book club popped up in a winter or a summer. But I tend to be a creature of habit, and I thought this was a great way to break out of my usual, to meet people that I already know, but on a different level, and to spend some time with them. So for the camaraderie, especially, but also to stretch my usual book selection choices, because as a creature of habit, I tend to pick, I'm a mystery fan, and so I am constantly looking for mysteries that are going to be the thing I sink into at night when I go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't look much outside of that genre. So book club, that's what book club is for me, to make sure that I get a smattering of something else in my reading life, because otherwise, you know, I might not. I mean, there are a lot of these books I wouldn't have chosen. There are historical novels and things like that that I might have chosen if somebody said, hey, you got to read this, it's great. But I think most of the books that we read are books, I enjoyed them, and they definitely stretched my thinking a little bit about people's experiences and why authors write about that subject. And
mm-hmm.
so that was my reason.
That's cool. Well, do you have any suggestions if someone wanted to form a book club? Do you have any ideas that might make it successful?
You know, I don't know what to say about that. Ours was pretty loosely started. It was just somebody who thought it would be a good idea, and then actually the people that started it and thought it would be a good idea didn't really continue with it. And so, I think to make it easy, I'm not a Facebooker. I know that sounds horrible and ancient. I'm not. And so our book club was nice enough. They do Facebook and they do email. And that just made it easy for us to, you know, keep in touch with when the book club is, where the book club is. It's kind of nice to set up times and to share responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice to know how many people are coming so that if you're the one hosting, you can be set up. But I think to just, you know, start off. Just a couple of people is a good way to start. And then you'll find people that want to gravitate. So mm-hmm. we have a small book club. It's tonight there'll be 10 people coming, and that's pretty much our max.
That's a crowd. Well, I think also what gathers people together is the food,
yeah.
and you mentioned the camaraderie.
Oh, absolutely.
And the chance to meet new people. I think that's been very beneficial and rewarding.
It really is, and it's a once-a-month thing, so it's not... It's something that you look forward to. It's once a month, you look forward to it, you know, unless you're overly busy and can't read the books. And quite frankly, there have been a couple times I couldn't read the books, but I went anyway, and I listened to what people had to say about it to see if it was a book that I was going to make sure I read.
So that's okay if you haven't read the book that you show up, but do people...
I think...
Yeah, do people still go, spoiler alert, if something's... They're sharing something like, oh, yeah, the character died in the end.
Oh, you know, I don't... Yeah, I guess that's something to think about. It wouldn't, I wouldn't want to know that much, but I wouldn't mind knowing things throughout to just interest me.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. You definitely don't want to tell the climax of the book if it's something that could ruin the book for you.
Yeah.
But, I think anybody who doesn't have a craftsy style about them or isn't overly busy but would like a little bit of a social stimulation and something to stimulate your mind, I think book club's a great choice. And ours has all different ages, too.
Yes, it does.
So that's nice.
Karen, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate talking to you and sharing these ideas about book clubs.
Well, you're welcome. Glad to help.
I talked to my friend Susan Reed about book clubs as well. Hi, Susan. I would want to talk to you about book clubs today.
Great, Laurie. I love books, so I love talking about it.
That's great. I wanted to know, why did you join a book club?
When my son went to college, there was a book required reading for him to begin his year there, and it was called Granny D, Walking Across America in My 90th Year.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, I read that book, and it's the true story of an 89-year-old woman who spends more than a year walking across the country from L.A. to D.C. in all kinds of weather with all kinds of ailments to protest campaign finance reform. And somewhere in the book, she says, women should join book clubs because friendships are what's important in life. So I did. I joined for the companionship of women.
Ah. Well, what kind of discussions do you have in your book group?
The discussions we have sometimes get off subject, but we always pull together at the end to talk about what it is we liked or didn't like. And often, if I didn't really like a book, by the time we get through discussing it,
uh-huh.
I like the book.
Uh-huh.
And so I think that's a neat part of book club and reading books that you don't choose to pick up, that someone else did, and it just increases your variety and interest in other books.
That's for sure. What are some of the titles that you've read that you like the best?
My top book, we've read over 100 books.
Wow.
In our club, and probably right, the number one is All the Light We Cannot See by
mm-hmm.
Anthony Doerr,
mm-hmm.
a fictional World War II story. I read that book twice, and then I listened to it on audio.
Wow.
I also loved In the Time of Butterflies by Julia Alvarez.
Yes.
It's historical fiction about the real sisters who were involved in a revolution in the Dominican Republic.
Uh-huh.
Another great book was Cutting for Stone by
Abraham
Verghese.
Yes.
Okay, it's about you know, two brothers born in Ethiopia who are conjoined at the head at birth. And that author also taught where I went to graduate school in Tennessee. Yeah. And then another book I loved is Sing Them Home, and it's a ghost story. And occasionally we read ghost stories, and I really like that.
Oh, cool. Do you ever read young adult novels or children's books?
We do, like The Book Thief and some other things. We do.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy those.
Do you have any suggestions for someone who might want to start a book group?
I do, Laurie. If you're interested in starting a book club, just ask four or five women you know if they'd like to read the same book. And they don't need to be your best friends or even avid readers. Just choose a book you like and give them a month to read it, and then have them over to your house for some good food and BYOB, and then just start talking about the book. And if it goes well, ask if someone else would be willing to do it another time. Then pick a date, being flexible about when most people could meet again.
Oh, that sounds good. And I have one last question for you, and that is, how far in advance do you choose the titles? For example, are you on a six-month rotation, or do you do it just serendipitously, whatever happens to come up?
Well, my book club group meets most of the time on Mondays.
Mm-hmm.
We try to go for once a month, but it's more like 8 to 9 times in a year.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we do an overnighter.
Oh, fun.
And not everyone comes to every book club meeting, but most people do. And so we try to be flexible. And usually the books are given, like, the next 3 book clubs, we're reading these books.
Well, that's a good idea. Then you know what to expect in case you finish one before it's time to talk about it. You can get started on the next one and stuff like that.
Yeah, and we're doing something new. Someone chose a book, one book, that's being passed around to everyone. And you kind of sign your name in it that you read it and pass it on to someone else, just to see how it works to have one book that you share. So that's kind of fun.
Oh,
neat. It's still being passed around.
It's still being, it'll take a while to read that one, I suppose. How many members are in your book group?
It's quite large. There's around 20.
That's a large number of people to talk about books. Mm-hmm. Susan, thank you so much for your time today. It was enjoyable talking to you about your passion for books and to learn a little bit more about how a book club operates. Thank you.
You're welcome, Laurie, anytime.
Thank you to my 3 interviewees this morning to help me learn more about how book clubs work, what's available at the public library, and some strategies for getting your book club up and running. For more information, be sure to check out the resources at the Kodiak Public Library.
Welcome to the Poetry Corner on Dog-Eared Reads, where we share good poems, sometimes for the season, sometimes just because. Today, KPLA volunteer Jennifer shares a poem.
Winkin', Blinkin', and Nod by Eugene Field. Winkin', Blinkin', and Nod one night sailed off in a wooden shoe, sailed on a river of crystal light into a sea of dew. "Where are you going, and what do you wish?" the old moon asked of the three. "We have come to fish for the herring fish that live in this beautiful sea. Nets of silver and gold have we," said Winkin, Blinkin, and Nod. The old moon laughed and sang a song as they rocked in the wooden shoe, and the wind that sped them all night long ruffled the waves of dew. The little stars were the herring fish that lived in that beautiful sea. "Now cast your nets wherever you wish. Never afeard are we," so cried the stars to the fishermen three, Winkin, Blinkin, and Nod. All night long their nets they threw to the stars in the twinkling foam. Then down from the skies came the wooden shoe, bringing the fishermen home. 'Twas all so pretty a sail, it seemed as if it could not be, and some folks thought 'twas a dream they'd dreamed of sailing that beautiful sea. But I shall name you the fishermen three, Winkin', Blinkin', and Nod. Wynken and Blynken are two little eyes, and Nod is a little head, and the wooden shoe that sailed the skies is a wee one's trundle bed. So shut your eyes while Mother sings of wonderful sights that be, and you shall see the beautiful things as you rock in the misty sea where the old shoe rocked the fishermen three, Wynken, Blynken, and Nod.
And you're listening to Dog-Eared Reads on KODK 90.7, Kodiak, Alaska. Want to know more about what's happening at the Kodiak Public Library? Stop by the library to pick up the schedule brochure, visit the public library website, follow the Kodiak Public Library Association on Facebook, or visit KPLA's website at kodiakpubliclibraryassociation.org. Events and activities for people of all ages are scheduled throughout the year. Thanks for your support, and happy reading.
If you would like to share some information about books you've read or to encourage other people to read, please contact KPLA. We are happy to put you on the air, and we will produce your review for you and help you with the audio process here at the KMXT station. Give us an email at kpla.alaska@gmail.com, or you can contact me, Lori Madsen, at 942-5552. We're always looking for new voices to add interest to our Dog-Eared Reads radio show. Want to know more about what's happening at the Kodiak Public Library? Follow KPLA on Facebook or visit our website at kodiakpubliclibraryassociation.org, or pick up the schedule of library events available at your public library and online. Happy reading! In this month's Roaring Over Amazing Reads, I want to review Small Great Things, a novel by Jodi Picoult. The protagonist, Ruth Jefferson, has been a labor and delivery nurse for more than 20 years. She's a widow because her husband had died in Afghanistan while serving in the Army. Her son, Edison, is an honor student. She's also an African-American living in a very white neighborhood of a Connecticut suburb, and she's the only black staff member in the maternity ward of the hospital where she works. To survive in that white world, Ruth has convinced herself that race doesn't matter. So when white supremacists Turk and Brittany Bauer refuse to allow her to take care of their newborn, the hospital acquiesces, and she is shocked. I started this book one afternoon, and I could not put it down, not only because it was dealing with the death of a baby, but it was also dealing with some issues of white supremacy that really has me shocked that people would get trained in how to be a white supremacist. Ms. Picoult has gone to great lengths to research the topic. There's even a bibliography at the end so you know where she got her information. And it is full of realistic scenarios that I wouldn't want to see happen here, but I do know it is possible. So I also found this book to be one that had some redemption in the end, although a rather simplistic ending, but well worth your time. I found that Scott Simon had interviewed Jodi Picoult on his book review section on Saturday's Morning Edition. Let's listen to that interview now.
Ruth Jefferson, a labor and delivery nurse at a hospital in Connecticut, says, "Every baby is born beautiful. It's what we project on them that makes them ugly." Ruth is barred from tending to a newborn baby by the baby's parents. Ruth Jefferson is African-American. Brittany and Turk Bauer are white supremacists. But Davis, their baby, goes into cardiac distress while Ruth is on duty, briefly alone in the nursery. Should she disobey the order she's been given by the hospital or touch the baby to try to save him? And does her slight hesitation doom the newborn boy? Small Great Things is the latest novel by Jodi Picoult, whose bestsellers have sold more than 14 million copies around the world. She joins us from WGBH in Boston. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
What made you want to tell a story like this?
I wanted to write about racism. I've wanted to do that for a very long time. 20 years ago, I started a book after reading a news story about an African-American undercover cop who was shot 4 times in the back on the subway by his white colleagues. And I started that book, and I tried very hard to write it, and ultimately I failed. I just couldn't write an authentic story. And I really second-guessed myself. I thought, you know, do I even have the right to write this story? I am a white woman. I have not lived this life. This is not my story to tell. And then in 2012, I read a news story. It came out of Flint, Michigan, and there was an African-American nurse there with 20 years of labor and delivery experience who helped deliver a baby. And in the aftermath, the father called her supervisor into the room and asked that she not touch the baby, nor anyone who looked like her. He pulled up his sleeve to reveal a swastika tattoo. There was a post-it note left on the baby's file that said no African-American personnel to touch this infant. And the nurse wound up suing the hospital. She settled out of court. I hope she got a very large payout. But it became a seed for me that grew. And I began to push the envelope a little bit, wondering what would happen if that nurse had been left alone with the baby. What would happen if she had to make a decision that could result on her going to trial and being defended by a white public defender who, like me and like many people I know, would never consider herself to be a racist. And I began to think about trying to tell the story from 3 different points of view: the African-American nurse, the white public defender, and the skinhead father, as they all confronted their beliefs about power and privilege and race.
I made note of can I call it an insight, Turk Bauer, your skinhead, has, about Kennedy McQuarrie, who's Ruth's attorney. Mm-hmm. And he says, I bet she drinks pumpkin spice lattes, voted for Obama, and donates after watching those commercials with sad dogs. Mm-hmm. I have to admit that made me laugh.
Well, you know, there's a good point for humor in a very heavy book. I think that in that particular case, what Turk is doing is making a snap judgment about Kennedy the way he would make a snap judgment about a person of color as well. We are all subject to that. We all have implicit biases, and we can't even help to act on those. It's like it's in the air we breathe. It's as Beverly Daniel Tatum says, it's like smog. You're constantly just taking it in without realizing what it's doing to you and how it's making you think. And, you know, I would not go to Turk for his great insights and judgments. I think he has a little learning to do before the book is up. But yeah, he, in a way, is just exhibiting once again, even with someone of his own race, a white woman who he would consider to be a race traitor because she is defending Ruth, who is African-American. You know, he's exhibiting his prejudice. And the interesting thing is that it's very easy to look at the skinhead and understand that's a racist. But racism goes beyond that. One of the things that I really learned while writing this novel was that racism is really about power, too. It's about prejudice plus power. And when you're white in America, you hold all the advantages. You hold all the cards. And so even if you are not talking actively about racism, that doesn't mean you're not part of the problem.
2016, a particularly good year for this novel to come out.
Well, it certainly is an interesting season for it to come out in. I would argue that although every reviewer, every interview that I've done has mentioned the timeliness of this novel, I would argue that any time in the past 200 years would have been timely. It's not that racism hasn't existed in our society. I think it's that in today's day and age, with a 24/7 news cycle and with the internet, we see microaggressions and acts of racism being played out in real time. And that's what makes this feel so incredibly immediate.
Jodi Picou, her novel, Small Great Things.
That author interview was heard on KMXT on October 8, 2016, rebroadcast by permission of NPR. Book reviewers have called Small Great Things the most important novel that Jodi Picou has ever written. Frank, uncomfortably introspective, and right on with the day's headlines. Some of the topics in the novel maybe move ahead a little too quickly. Ruth moves from being a colorblind nurse to racial awareness rather quickly. 2/3 of the way through the novel, she's earnestly correcting her friend, "Slavery isn't black history, it's everyone's history." In your defense, you don't want to talk quite about as much as I do, but such heavy-handedness never diminishes the story's greatest strength. Small Great Things is rather long, with a meandering middle
and a tendency toward the melodramatic and a rushed ending that does appear rather glib. And Picot will be criticized for choices she's made in her representations of people of color, maybe somewhat oversimplified, and an oversimplification of a complex issue. But it's also exciting to have a high-profile writer like Picot take on an earnest risk to expand our cultural conversation about race and prejudice. Given a star review by ALA's book list, it is worth your time, and I hope you'll enjoy reading it. We have another book review for your listening pleasure today. Bob Ross reviews From Humboldt to Kodiak, the story of an ancient colony.
Welcome to another in the series of book reviews from the resource materials of the Alaska Room of the Kodiak Public Library. Today's title is From Humboldt to Kodiak, 1886 to 1895 by Fred Roscoe, published by the Limestone Press, University of Alaska in 1992. My name is Bob Ross, and it is my pleasure to be with you today. This book is largely the first-hand accounts of Fred and his parents, Ida and Ernest Roscoe, in the late 19th century Kodiak. This family spent 6 years in the village of Kodiak from 1886 to 1891 and another 2 more years on Wood Island from 1893 to 1895. The Roscoes established the first American school at Kodiak and later surveyed and built the Baptist Mission and Orphanage on Wood Island. The Roscoes' child, Agnes Ernestine Roscoe, born the 3rd of May in 1887, is thought to be the first white child not of Russian descent to be born on Kodiak Island. The Roscoes were in Kodiak during the historic murder of Benjamin McIntyre by Peter Anderson. Ernest Roscoe was part of the searching party seeking to bring Mr. Anderson to justice. The account of this killing is the best, most detailed that I have read until the Kodiak Mirror article published earlier in 2015. This book gives a feel for the dynamics of the pre-1900 Kodiak, its social structure, the fur trade, the Russian church influence, social cultures and practices. My stated interest in researching and reading about Kodiak is roughly the World War II time period, 1939 to 1946. Yet this book was a valuable read even for one such as I with my narrow interest. So much information is contained in this book that is helpful in understanding the Kodiak people in its early territorial development, the town layout, and the Russian cultural legacy. This book helps me to better be able to assimilate other source information into better understanding and meaning. As an example, the statement that Kodiak was a sleepy fishing village until the 1939 construction boom. This book also is a jumping-off point for seeking further information in areas noted by Roscoe in his book. A large totem grave marker of high craftsmanship in the native cemetery on Wood Island is an example. The remains and location of Russian works on Wood Island, or how Prohibition worked in practice in Kodiak, are other examples of local history which might be further investigated. Law and order is another theme, with many examples from this book. For when the Roscoes first arrived, there was no local government, no federal control except for the customs collection and for the oversight of the revenue cutters like the Bear, and murder was not an uncommon event. A Russian priest was murdered in the town of Yuzinki on Spruce Island. A man named Shu Shar Inkin was sentenced by the Kodiak town fathers on circumstantial evidence to 1 year confinement on an uninhabited island a short distance from St. Paul Harbor near Wood Island. It was that, or he was to be hanged. His sentence was self-directed. He could only row his skiff in for supplies and return to his Isle of Exile. If he was found in violation of his sentence, he would be immediately hanged. He served his sentence to the day, returning to Kodiak at great personal risk during a northwesterly storm, he not willing to wait even one extra day on his Isle of Confinement. He lived quietly in the Kodiak community thereafter. Did you know that Kodiak could lay claim to having the Brooklyn Bridge? Before the ash fall of 1912, there was a creek fed by at least 2 freshwater ponds, one in the area between Monk's Rock and the old craft store. The other pond is in the area of McDonald's on Lower Mill Bay Road. The footbridge was located near the creek's entrance to the harbor. The small suburb called Brooklyn was on the Pillar Mountain side of the stream, with the village of Kodiak on the other side. The bridge took its name from the Brooklyn suburb. Later, after the ash had filled the ponds, and both drain pipes and fill closed over what remained of the stream, that Brooklyn suburb ceased to be. It was all just Kodiak then. Brooklyn Avenue got its name from this former suburb and roughly followed the course of the now-defunct stream after the drains were put in place. And it remained Brooklyn Avenue until sometime after urban renewal in 1964, following the tidal wave, to be now Lower Mill Bay Road. The crook that's in the main street of Old Kodiak is due to the village development and building before the ashfall and eruption in 1912. Fred Roscoe's account of the 1890 death of U.S. Customs Collector Finnegan mentions the Brooklyn Bridge. Finnegan's lifeless body was found submerged in the Near Island Channel just off the American Commercial Company's wharf, which is now the ferry dock and visitor center. Investigations showed a trail of blood from the dock all the way to the Brooklyn Bridge, where a pool of blood was found, as though whoever was carrying the body, or Finnegan himself, had rested. That blood trail continued across the bridge into a Brooklyn native woman's house, where evidence of a terrific fight was found. Everything was topsy-turvy and blood-spattered, including the walls. Finnegan had a reputation of being a mean, ugly man and picking fights when he was drunk. He was known to have been drinking the last time he was seen alive. Very few people liked him. The coroner's jury, after several days' investigation, ruled that Finnegan had met his death by falling off the wharf and hitting his head on a spike sticking out of a piling, thus cutting off the top of his scalp and drowning him. Much, much more is remembered in the pages of this autobiographical book. I really enjoyed From Humboldt to Kodiak, 1886 to 1895 by Fred Roscoe, and believe you will too. I hope you have enjoyed this book review from a selection of the books of the Alaska Room in the Kodiak Public Library. My name is Bob Ross, and until our next book review, I bid you good reading. Thank you for tuning in today.
The story, From Rumpelstiltskin to War and Peace, is one of the basic tools invented by the human mind for the purpose of gaining understanding. There have been great societies that did not use the wheel, but there have been no societies that did not tell stories. Ursula K. Le Guin. Thank you.
You're listening to Windham Hills, a winter solstice reunion. Song Before Spring by Benjamin Verdery. Available at the Kodiak Public Library. You've been listening to Dog-Eared Reads, Kodiak Public Library Association's show for book lovers of all ages. Are you new to Kodiak or looking for a place to contribute your time? We are always looking for volunteers. There's opportunities for this radio show as well as seasonal availabilities when you can offer your time on an ongoing basis. You can help with book sales, author events, and more. Visit us online at KodiakPublicLibraryAssociation.org or on Facebook at the same name. Hope to see or hear from you soon, and keep on reading.
Heaven in your breath, the simplest of pleasures, the world at its base.